Today's program has been brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
This is Straight from the Source, streaming to you from the Heritage Radio Network studio in beautiful Bushwick, Brooklyn, New York, this and every Wednesday afternoon at 3 p.m. Eastern. My name is Clay Gordon, and in the 20 years that I've been exploring my chocolate life, I visited cacao farms from Bolivia to Belize and beyond, spent time with farmers, cacao merchants, and some of the world's best chocolate makers and confectioners. Straight from the Source is inspired by the people I've met and what they've taught me. My guests this week are Jeff Pizzina, one of the founders of Cotton Tree Lodge and Moho Chocolate, both in Belize, and Taylor Erkinen and her daughter, Moxie. Taylor hails from the Brooklyn kitchen and is getting ready to travel to Belize to do some research on a culinary program, which we'll talk about in the second half of the program. Welcome, Jeff. Welcome, Taylor.
Hello.
Hi. Hey, how are you? Hey, Jeff, you know, I visited the lodge four times since it opened in 2007 and led three different tour groups there over the time, you know, all of which had something to do with cocoa and chocolate. And from the beginning, I know that you were tied into the local cocoa culture because of, you know, the Mayans are, you know, hugely, hugely important in terms of the history of cocoa and chocolate. But you've got a new venture down there called Moho Chocolate, which is an interesting hybrid. It's a U.S. craft chocolate company with one foot in Belize and the other one here in the U.S. So, you know, tell me a little bit about, you know, how it all happened and, you know, how what you're doing now has evolved over the last couple of years.
Sure. It all started. I have the business Cotton Tree Lodge, which is a eco lodge in the rainforest in Belize, and we're surrounded by, our neighbors are Mayan Indian farmers that grow cacao. So there's lots of cacao in the area. And when I first came down to Belize, I didn't really know much about it. And I, before we built the lodge, I was camping in the rainforest and went into town to get some snacks, went to the farmer's market, and I thought I was buying a bag of almonds, and it turned out it was a bag of washed, unfermented, and dried cocoa beans.
So you were in for a little bit of a shock there, I'm sure.
Yeah, so then I had to figure out what to do with cocoa beans, and I got fascinated by it. And while I was camping, I ended up roasting them over an iron skillet on the campfire, and used some condensed milk, and more or less made my own fudge. And that was cool. That was fun. And I got more and more into chocolate. And we started working once we opened the lodge with the farmers in the area. And part of what we do is we do some cultural tourism where we expose our guests to the people in the area. And since they're cacao farmers, we started some Mayan chocolate making tours where our guests can go out to a cacao farm with a farmer and then go to his family's house and make chocolate with them traditionally how they do it and have lunch with them and get a chance to interact.
Right.
What happened from there is I got interested in doing my own chocolate business and ended up starting two different chocolate brands down there, Cotton Tree Chocolate and Moho Chocolate. And with Moho Chocolate, we kind of took it to the next level where we decided that we wanted to have more control over the fermenting and the drying of the cocoa beans. And I've been working with two partners on the cocoa bean business, which are separate from all this stuff, and that's called Maya Mountain Cacao. And I have partnered with Alex Whitmore from Tava Chocolate and Emily Stone, who had started out as our intern, is now running the business. and kind of forged connection directly with the farmers. And Maya Mountain Cacao through Emily got 215 farmers certified organic. And it was kind of a, you know, we were kind of working in a market where there was one other source.
Well, yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit about that for, you know, people who don't know much of the history. I mean, the Toledo Cacao Growers Association, which is the other group that you're talking about, has been around for a long time. And if I remember correctly, it is the first cocoa crop that was both organically certified and fair trade certified. Is that right?
That's correct. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
And they're best known, I mean, apart within the industry anyway, but if you were to walk in, if people were to walk into a store up until within the last year or two and were to buy a bar of Green and Black's Maya Gold, some of the beans in that bar would have come from the Toledo Cacao Growers Association. Is that right?
Yep.
Is that still happening, do you know? I mean, is Kraft, now that they're the owner of Cadbury, who bought Green and Blacks, is the TCGA still are they working with Big Chocolate right now, or has that the change in ownership had an effect on what they're doing down there in Belize?
My information may be a little outdated, but as far as I understand, they're still buying cocoa beans from them. I know that there has been the exact way that they've been doing business and supplying from the TCGA to Maya Gold. Mm-hmm. It's probably changed a little bit because the person who was running it died, actually.
Right.
And I think some of their business had, you know, they lost a bit of quality control from what I see happening. It's like nobody's kind of watching what was happening. And so I know for at least a little while, they had stopped purchasing the cocoa beans from there, but I believe that they had started again. And again, my information is outdated. I'm not really positive, but as far as I know, they are now purchasing cocoa beans again from there.
But is part of the reason why Maya Mountain Cacao exists is because you saw this change in quality at the Toledo Cacao Growers Association, and you thought that there might be an opportunity if you were to put some competition in the market that you might be able to help raise prices, or, you know, what's the motivation there?
Yeah, part of it was practical. By the way, the two chocolate companies I'm involved with, one buys the beans from the TCGA and one buys the beans from Maya Mountain Cacao, so we're supporting both enterprises. Cotton Tree Chocolate buys beans from the TCGA.
Right.
And the issue there was that, you know, Julie, our manager, she'd really have to pick through the beans to find good ones because there was so much inconsistency in the quality that she wanted to really find, you know, mm-hmm. what would make good chocolate, and it wasn't always easy. And so, yeah, part of what Maya Mountain Cacao is doing differently is instead of having the farmers both grow the cacao and then ferment it, and then dry it, and then bring it to market. The farmers are just growing the cacao, and then Maya Mountain Cacao is going out to the farms with a pickup truck and some extension services and workers, and paying the farmers cash on the spot for the cacao. And we're doing it basically at the same price as the TCGA. And essentially, the farmers got less work. They don't have to ferment, they don't have to dry, and they don't have to deliver it to market. So they can concentrate on what they're good at, which is the farming, and then we take care of the processing. And the big benefit with us doing the processing is a lot of cacao farmers, you know, they're smallhold farmers. They have a half an acre to 3 acres, and it's really difficult to have very much quality control on the fermentation and the drying on such a small scale, because the fermentation needs to generate heat in order for it to work properly. And oftentimes the small farmers don't have enough volume to do that. So we basically just aggregate the volume, get enough, and then we can, you know, have better quality control on the fermentation and drying.
So did you build the fermentation facility on the Cotton Tree Lodge property, or where down in the Punta Gorda area are you?
Yeah, we did it on the property of Cotton Tree Lodge, because you know, I'm trying to make one hand work well with the other hand, and you know, it's a benefit for the lodge because it's almost an activity. You know, people can go check out the cacao fermenting while they're on trips. And as you mentioned, you've been down on these chocolate making week tours that we've run, and you've run one, where that is actually part of the tour. So yeah, it's great from the point of view of Maya Mountain Cacao. They have a nice, secure facility, and we already have staff and a road, and we have the space. So it worked for both parties involved.
No, it sounds like a more or less ideal situation. So, certainly, the times that I've been down, we've gone and visited this farmer Eladio Pop, who, if anybody has a chance to go down to Belize and visit Cotton Tree Lodge, you have to go visit Farmer Pop. He's probably one of the most connected farmers to his land that I have met in the 10 or 15 years that I've been traveling for chocolate. It's really quite fabulous. You get a chance to learn about all sorts of local foods like Jippy Joppa, and they have wild turmeric, and you can get Jamaica limes, and it's just a fabulous way to spend the day. And after you're done, or the morning, and after you're done, you go to his family's property. He's got 12 children or something like that, and his wife, lovely woman, they make lunch for you, and they'll start making chocolate, roasting the beans, and doing all the work, and you just really get a sense for really what a sort of traditional use of cocoa and chocolate is within a relatively modern Mayan household. But during each one of these trips that I've been on, we've gone out to gather pods and bring them back to the lodge so we could start a fermentation box. And depending on what time of the year you're at, you might not have many pods, or they might not, or the pulp might not be very wet. And so getting them into the fermentation box and actually getting fermentation to start can be a real challenge. So having a regular ongoing facility where you're collecting from a lot of people people can see it and really get an experience for what it's like is an important part of the process, and a great thing for visitors to the lodge. Now, but are you making the chocolate? You said you were partnering with Alex Whitmore at Taza.
On My Mountain Cacao, we set up the business for the fermentation and drying and exporting of cocoa beans. And so he's making some of his chocolate using the beans, and Moho Chocolate in Belize is making some of their chocolate, and Mass Brothers in New York is making some of their chocolate. Those are the three customers right now. We're not partnering on the chocolate, we're just partnering on the beans.
So where are you making the chocolate? Where are you making the chocolate these days?
At Moho Chocolate, where the cruise ships come into Belize, in Fort Street Tarzan Village in Belize City. We started a little factory there, and we have about 2,000 square feet. We have a little factory, cafe, and bar, and so people could come in. We do something that's slightly unique there. So we make the chocolate from bean to bar, but we also, while we're tempering the chocolate, we deposit the chocolate into molds, and before it hardens, we bring it out for our customers to come make their own custom bars and add custom toppings to, so they could take it out and make it play a little bit before we take it back and it hardens and we wrap it up.
There finally is a reason to leave the airport in Belize City. There's a reason to leave the airport in Belize City.
Yeah. It's kind of a cool thing. It's fun.
Well, cool. Well, Jeff, I know that you're actually under a good deal of deadline pressure. You're going to spend most of the time between now and the end of the year down at Cotton Tree Lodge. You've got a whole bunch of people coming. You've got a group, and you're planning to do some sort of celebration on the 21st, which is the end of the Mayan calendar age and the start of the new one. Lots of last-minute stuff I know you're doing, but I want to thank you for taking a few minutes out of your day talking to us about the Cotton Tree Lodge and Moho Chocolate. And we're going to be taking a short break from talking with Jeff. Mm-hmm. And when we return to Straight from the Source on Heritage Radio Network, I will be talking with Taylor Erkinen of the Brooklyn Kitchen. We're going to be talking about what she plans to do when she goes down to Belize in just a few days. And we're also going to be doing a short chocolate tasting with some local brew. So come back after the break.
You're listening to This Body by Pamela Royal on the heritageradionetwork.org. Today's program has been brought to you by Heritage Foods USA. Since the inception of the Heritage Turkey Project, more than 10 of Frank Reese's partner farms have converted to Good Shepherd from a corporate system whose weak protocols on husbandry, welfare, and genetics necessitated the use of subtherapeutic antibiotics at all stages of production. When Frank Reese started in 2002, he hatched 900 eggs in his barn. This year, 20,000 eggs were hatched. This is an enormous victory for sustainable agriculture and biodiversity. For more information and to order your Heritage Turkey today, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
Welcome back to Straight from the Source on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Clay Gordon. I'm the creator and moderator of thechocolatelife.com and author of the IACP finalist book, Discover Chocolate. My in-studio guests today are Taylor Erkinen of the Brooklyn Kitchen and her daughter, Moxie. Hey, Taylor, welcome.
Hello.
Hey, Moxie, can you say hello? Hello. All right. Well, I notice you have some milk chocolate covered yummies over there, so we're going to let you take care of those. And if you feel like telling us a little bit about them later on, we'll ask you, okay? Okay. So for when you walked in here, like everybody knew who you were, right? But for the guests who are listening to us today who don't know what the Brooklyn Kitchen is all about, what is the Brooklyn Kitchen all about?
We are a little bit of everything, I think. We started in 2006 as a partnership between myself and my husband, Harry Rosenblum. We started off as a cooking store, you know, your run-of-the-mill cookware, knives, books, and tools. And we wanted to have classes, and we were very much invested in the idea of community. And we have done well in fostering a community and supporting people who we like and who like us. And in that, and responding to our customers, we've grown to now, we're co-located with a butcher shop, The Meat Hook, that sells whole animal custom cuts and a great sausage assortment with three of our partners. And we have expanded our cooking class selection to offer, we offer 8 to 10 classes a week. We do private parties and events. And we have also developed a growing grocery department. So we've kind of morphed from a table full of, you know, whatever was fresh from the distributor that week. And now we have an actual produce case and actual produce tables. And we're kind of learning it from the ground up without having had much market experience before.
So what's the focus on the educational programming at the Brooklyn Kitchen?
It's very technique-based. We sell a lot of knife skills classes and pickling classes. We are different from a lot of the other cooking schools in New York area, because I think a lot of the other ones kind of focus on experience, you know, a Tuscan dinner and the 7 courses that maybe not as geared towards young people. Our classes are more affordable, and we like to think that you can put together elements of our classes to make your own curriculum and, you know, figure out your own cooking style in your own way.
And it's aimed more at an amateur rather than a professional chef.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Okay, so how much chocolate are you currently teaching at the Brooklyn Kitchen?
We have not teaching a lot of chocolate classes, and we definitely want to. Chocolate making is one of those things where people think that they want to find out more about, and then once they start to learn more, they realize that it's best left to the professionals. It's not really a home hobby, as you well know.
Well, it's a home hobby like home brewing is. I mean, if you really want to get into it, you have to be serious about doing it. I mean, I should point out that Jeff, who was on the first half of the program, actually is a home brewer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he started off as a home craft brewer, and that was part of his interest in experimenting with fermentation of cocoa down in Belize, because he had that experience
for
fermentation.
Funnily, you don't need to tell me that, because I've known Jeff for going on 20 years, and I knew him in the modern brewer days up in Cambridge.
Very, very nice. So you're going down to Belize.
I am.
And in the next couple of days?
Saturday.
Taking Moxie with you?
No, unfortunately, oh. Moxie is not going on this trip.
Okay, well, I've been there, and it's really kid-friendly. Although, yeah, she might be a little young. I mean, it's a really kid-friendly place. So what's the connection between the Brooklyn Kitchen and what it is that you're doing down in Belize? How does it come together?
It really is just, the coming out of a brainstorm that Jeff and I were having when we saw each other in the fall, and we said, we got to get down there. And he said, you know what? I've got the program for you. And he's designing an immersive culinary program wherein we will visit different cultures, the homelands or the different villages of different cultures, and then, you know, learn about where their culture, their food, their gardening, their farming, their agriculture, and their histories, and then cook with them, and then, you know, bring it all back to the lodge, and then have a nice cooperative feast. And I think that we'd do well to have about 25 people.
Right.
I think that would be get enough of, mm-hmm. give everybody a chance to really right. be involved with
the. So it's a chance to take part of the community that's grown around the Brooklyn Kitchen and take them and do this interesting experience someplace else.
Yeah, transport it.
So what do you bring back to what it is that you're doing at the Brooklyn Kitchen when you do that?
Well, I mean, it's just immersive understanding of different cultures, of the cuisines of different cultures. It's definitely a departure from what we have been doing, but I think that there's so much curiosity about food, and especially what Jeff has told me, and I hope to learn next week, about the different cultures in the Moho region is such a interesting destination for so many different peoples. So he has told me about the Mayan culture and their, you know, cuisine and chocolate making, Mayan, East Indian, Garifuna, Creole, and Mennonite. So
yes.
I'm fascinated.
No,
by
it is. It is really quite fabulous. I mean, and if you get a chance, if they bring in some Garifuna drummers, or you get a chance to go down and visit and hear what's going on,
I think we'll have to implement that on the.
It's a fabulous experience, and hopefully you'll get a chance to visit with Farmer Pop and his family.
Because that's
it's been
on the tour.
It was a great experience for me every single time, and. When I talk with people who've been on these tours, that particular day was the one that people remember as much as anything else. So what I wanted to do in the time we have left was to do a little chocolate tasting. I've got some chocolate here from Cotton Tree, not from Cotton Tree Lodge, but from Moho Chocolate. And we're going to start off with a 72%. We have two of them, a 72% and a 73% with nibs. And we're got a beer, Brooklyn
awesome.
Brewery Black Ale, that we picked from the bar.
I'll take two.
We're reaching around, pick from the bar, here at Roberta's, which is the home of the Heritage Radio Network Studios. And so why don't we start off with a beer? Because anytime you do a pairing or tasting like this, you need to develop sort of a separate individual sense memory. So you taste this beer. You know, and even though it's a black ale, you know, the first sense for me is bright, citrusy in many respects. And there's a lot of fruit in it, which I think is really quite remarkable. I mean, this is not a beer that I'm familiar with generally. I don't know if you are either.
I've never had it.
Right. And then the next thing we're going to do is take a little bit of the chocolate. So just smell. It's got a really rich, strong chocolate aroma. And a nice soft melt, you know. I constantly need to be reminded that when I chew, I can't chew into the microphone. Because we don't want to get the sounds of chewing. But it's got a nice soft melt. It's a little sweet.
I like the texture.
Overall, the texture, a little sweet.
It has a good bite, a good crunch.
Right.
When you bite into it.
Mm-hmm.
Without being too hard.
No. And when we put the two together, what do we get?
I want some water.
It's actually a nice combination. I mean, the beer is a little bright and sweet, and it goes with the brightness and the sweetness of the chocolate very, very nicely. So, Moxie, were you eating some of the dark chocolate? Yeah? I know you're eating milk chocolate earlier. Can you step up to the microphone and tell people what you think about the chocolate? Did you like it?
Yeah, I liked it.
That's good. Just in case anybody is worried about it, we're not asking Moxie to partake in the beer part of this, just in the chocolate.
She has some vanilla seltzer for her pairing.
She has vanilla seltzer with her pairing. That's probably, you know what? It's sweet as well. So I'll bet you it's a really, really nice combination. So we have another chocolate from Moho. This is a 73%, so it's just a slightly darker. But this one also contains whole cocoa nibs in it. Okay. And what will happen is that not only will the cocoa nibs... Yeah.
That's a lot of nibs.
It's a lot of nibs. Well, it gives you an idea. The bars are, in fact, handmade.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a lot of nibs in here. And what will happen is that not only will you get a change in the texture because of the coarseness of the nib in it, but the nibs are basically pure chocolate. So it actually will also effectively increase the cocoa percentage of the bar. So that even though... The 72 to 73%, there's not a whole lot of difference in them. You really shouldn't be able to perceive a whole lot of difference. With the cocoa nib in it, it should be a very, very different chocolate.
Can we dry my hands?
Yeah, you chocolate all over your hands, don't you?
Yep. You know, Moxie, you have chocolate all over your hands, right? Can you lick it? Yeah. That's the best thing. That's what I always do when I have chocolate on my hands.
I think you're going to have to lick that off your fingers.
Mm-hmm. What do you think?
A napkin.
Yeah, you know what? We're in the studio, and I don't see any napkins.
A mother is always prepared.
Oh, that's true. So I'm sure there's something there going on. Well, there you go. Thank you very much. So it really is quite remarkable how different this chocolate tastes. With only a very small difference in the percentage of cocoa.
Yeah, it has the little bit of the bitterness from the nibs.
Mm-hmm. And it's a much more complex, much rounder, I think, chocolate, which I think is quite remarkable. Mm. And the beer to go along with it, the bitterness of the cocoa nibs is bringing out more of the roasty flavors, whereas with the previous chocolate, you know, it was the sweetness of the beer and the sweetness of the chocolate were working together. And then this one, the nib. The nib is working with the beer, and you've got a richer, less sweet, more complete, more rounded, I think, kind of experience that's going on. Now, do you do, you know, tasting and pairing events at the kitchen, or you say you're mostly focused on technique?
We're going to have to start doing a little more.
Yeah, I think, they're fabulous and interesting. Ah, milk chocolate covered cereal bits.
Yeah.
Yum. Jacques Therese was in earlier today as a guest, and he left some things behind. And we're taking advantage of those.
I'll have to let her run around the garden a little later.
Yeah. So when you come back, we'd love to have you back on and learn what it is that you learned, especially the chocolate part of it.
Yeah, I will be making some chocolate in the Moho factory in Belize City on Saturday when we arrive after two flights and before my flight down to Punta Gorda. So I look forward to seeing the whole experience, and then we'll be on the way back, we'll be wrapping the finished product.
Oh, great. So you'll be making it, spending a week, and then going back to the factory and putting wrappers around it.
Yeah, I think there will be some assistance in that process, but I will learn something.
No, it's fabulous. If you've never been and seen the entire process from beginning to end, it's wonderful. Most people have an opportunity just to go to the factory and see what's going on there. But to be able to go and walk into the farms, be able to see the trees, go through, smell the fermentation process, taste the baba, the pulp, which is around the seeds, which is cool. One of the most fabulous things. It's a culinary experience in and of itself. I mean, being able to pull it all into a coherent whole is going to be a whole lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to the whole spectrum of the chocolate experience.
All right, and we'll, as I say, we'll when you get back, we'll check back in and find out what you learned.
Yeah,
and we'll find out about doing chocolate and other kinds of things at the Brooklyn Kitchen going forward.
Definitely.
So today, we've been talking about cocoa, chocolate, and Belize with Jeff Pizzina and Taylor Erkinen of the Brooklyn Kitchen. Moho chocolate, which we tasted today, can be purchased at Ronnie Sue's Chocolate Shop in the Essex Street Market on the Lower East Side of Manhattan. And while you're there, make sure to visit the Heritage Foods stand, Heritage Foods, founder of the network here, and also Saxelby Cheesemongers, and is a host of a fabulous program here. She's currently on maternity leave. They had the baby a couple days ago.
Awesome. Congratulations.
Yeah, it's great. So yeah, that's to do this. And I want to thank Rhonda Cave of Ronnie Sue's down there today for having the chocolate and providing the chocolate for today's program. I also want to thank Joe Galarraga for engineering today's show, and thank the rest of the Heritage Foods USA and Heritage Radio Network teams for their hard work building, maintaining, and growing HRN. Straight from the Source comes to you live every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, listen on Stitcher, or go to heritageradionetwork.org. to stream, download, listen to all of the episodes of my program and the thousands of episodes from all of the other Heritage Radio Network hosts. If you're not already a member of the Heritage Radio Network, please join me in supporting their efforts. If you have questions that you'd like to hear answered on future programs, call 718-497-2128, email the show at info@heritageradionetwork.org, or contact me through thechocolatelife.com. And as always, thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Moxie.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.